The Letterbox Crusade presents Fanville Fridays. Welcome to another episode of Fan Film Fridays. I am your host, Clinton Robison, still down here in Longbox Crusade Basement. And I'll tell you, folks, I have been having these wonderful dreams lately. No, not just dreams, visions, an absolute vision. I have written a stage play. It is the most wonderful, absolutely incredible play, and it's going to be performed by mice. That's right, mice. Because that's what's available down here in the basement is a bunch of mice. You can train mice to act, right? Can't you? Maybe, sort of. Well, it doesn't matter. I built them a stage anyway. So, but I needed a headliner. I needed a headliner for this show. Not this show, you know, the play. This show already has a headliner, maybe. Anyway, the play itself. So, of course, I recruited the greatest actor of all time. No, don't say Sean Connery, listeners. You know he's not available. No, don't say Mary Jane. She is too available. I got the one, the only, the absolute toast of the East Coast, Steve Givens.
Oh, wow. That is by far the best introduction I've ever received on a show. So thank you very much for that.
You are comfortable performing with mice, though, right?
Oh, sure. Well, here's the thing. I have two cats, so they can't come to the show, obviously. There would be way too much tension between the audience, the cats, and the mice. I think that would not be a pleasant sight to see by any stretch of the imagination.
So what you're telling me is you have stipulations in your contract.
Exactly. My cats can't come anywhere near this. You know, that we have to keep it a secret. I have to be clean thoroughly before I finish any performance or after I finish any performance, so I don't come home smelling like rodent and therefore inciting their jealousy and their ire.
Okay, that's fair. Well, Steve.
Although, how is the lighting in the basement? Because I do expect good lighting. You got to have good lighting.
Well, I mean, it is a basement.
Yeah.
We have a light, and I do mean a light.
All right, I can work with that. I am 6'3", so how big are these mics?
They're adequate size.
we might have to play on my shoulders then. I mean, I'm going to have a hard time. I don't stoop too well.
Well, you see, they're not so much mice as they are rats, and they're not so much adequate as they are sometimes the size of small dogs.
Okay, so you've got the R-O-U-S's from Princess Bride in there, is what you're telling me.
I don't believe they exist.
I think I need to re-examine the contract you're trying to shove on me here.
So what you're telling me is this dream has become a nightmare.
In some ways, yeah. It keeps getting worse and worse, so we'll see where it goes. Are there going to be fire pits as well? I mean, what's going on here?
I mean, if we have it in the budget, or there's a gas leak, you know, one or the other.
Okay. All right. Well, draw up the contract and we'll see how it goes.
Okay. Well, while we're redoing this, let's go back to the dreams. Just, as an aside, How familiar are you with the concept of Sandman as a franchise?
Well, that
DC Vertigo guy that, you know, got a Netflix series a year or so back.
I remember hearing a little bit about that character. You know, I think he had some moderate success in the late 80s, early 90s. I'm joking, of course. I remember when the series came out. I was about 14 or 15. And I was steeped in superhero comics at the time, and I wasn't quite ready to jump on the Vertigo dark story, more mature type of fanfare that certain books were bringing forth, Sandman being one of those books. It wasn't until I actually was in college and a friend of mine who was not a, I mean, this is very interesting because is being a lifelong comic book reader, it took a non-comic book fan, a non-comic book person to bring me into Sandman for the first time. And I was in college, and a friend of mine that I knew from high school, who was not a graphic novel reader, a comic book reader, she had gotten into Sandman, and we were hanging out, and she mentioned Sandman, and she was going through some stuff and showing me like the different trades she had collected. And I hit on the issue that features Hector Hall as Sandman and Lyta Hall what was the second Sandman? What was his name? It was created by Jack Kirby. Is that correct? The second Sandman?
I can't think of his, secret identity guy,
I remember in the comics, Hector Hall took over as that Sandman. And when I was like, oh, wait, you know, they're bringing in actual DC characters. I wasn't even fully aware at the time that Sandman was crossing over into the main DC universe. And I said, oh, so Neil Gaiman really has some knowledge of the DC universe here. I mean, he's using it in bits and pieces as he sees fit, but he still has knowledge of it. I mean, because that's a pretty, like, getting into the weeds of, like, Hector Hall and Lyta Hall. I mean, those aren't necessarily tip-of-the-tongue characters that everyone knows. And so I was, when I saw that was my hook, because I'm like, what is he doing with these characters, and what's going to happen? And so I started reading the trades, and I haven't read every single one, but I've read a lot of them. And I've read all the big ones that people always read, all the major storylines. So it's been something that I've gone back to again and again over the years. And again, another college experience I had, a college professor, I wasn't actually taking the course, but when I went to go buy books for my courses that year, I was an English major. There was a professor who was, I can't remember the name of the course, but he was teaching the first trade paperback of Sandman. He actually, like, and this was in the mid-90s, and I was like, oh, well, this is interesting. I've never seen anything like this where you had a professor or a college-level course handling a graphic novel like this. And I'm like, okay, now I'm intrigued. So that was my first introduction into Sandman and the books. And since then, I've been here and there catching different things about the character. It also made me a reader of Neil Gaiman. I've read a lot of his books, also I watched the Netflix series as well when it came out. It was and also the audiobook series that came out. The audio not a book, but an audio dramatization. That's what I was looking for. I've been intrigued by this world for a long time, is what I'm trying to get at.
And here I was just going to be like, so you've never really heard of him. Okay, good.
I warned you, I'm verbose, so I gave you everything there. So,
hey, that just means I will definitely have an informed opinion coming up, because
I was informed. What are you talking about? I don't have anything valuable to say here. Come on.
And that's the show. Good night, everybody. Mm-hmm. So, just as a quick aside, how familiar are you with fan films?
Not at all. The one that you sent me is the first one that I've ever seen.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
This is gonna make me sound like really snooty. But I've never gotten into the fan film type. I mean, I know there are good ones out there. I really respect those people who are investing their time and effort into making a film, short or what have you, because I am a film lover, and I know a little bit about what it goes into making a film, and it is not an easy endeavor. So I have a great deal of respect for anybody who will step up and say, I'm going to make a film, have a story to tell, and I want to tell it through film. And so I have a great deal of respect for that. But the fan films have just never been something I've ever jumped into. So when you asked me to do this with the fan film, I was like, this is going to be a neat and different experience for me. So I was happy to do it.
Well, I encourage you to go back and listen to the back catalog, because, you know, there's about 36 or so of these mm-hmm. that we've gone over, you know, give you a little bit of entertainment afterward.
Sure. I look forward to it, because I really, without going too far ahead and getting too far ahead of ourselves here, I really enjoyed the fan film you had me watch. I thought it was quite interesting.
Alrighty. So, you know, we did cover a Sandman fan film about 10 episodes back or so. So no reason to really dive into the whole background of the character or franchise itself. If you really want to know, you can go back and listen to that past episode, or, you know, just do a quick Google search. But really, if you have no clue about the Sandman franchise, I'm really surprised you're listening at this point at all. Alrighty. So the fan film I had for Steve is Black Sand. And just for everybody's little FYI, this was suggested to me by the director himself. So very much thanks to him for this. You know, he actually reached out and said, hey, you know, would you mind covering this? And I'm like, oh, heck yes.
Very good. That's cool.
Mm-hmm. So Black Sand is a Sandman fan film that was uploaded by the Black Sand YouTube account back in August of 2017. It currently sports nearly 8,800 views, and it runs about 14 and a half minutes. And of course, you know, as per usual, everyone can check the show notes and follow that link and watch the film themselves. The film stars Sid Phoenix as Richie, Michelle Ryan as Death, Matthew Foucher as Marco, Samantha Bentley as Sally, Joel Fillmore as Sandman, Helen and Terry Mellis as Richie's parents. The film itself was written and directed by Bernard Pusher and produced by Kate Aldridge. And if I got any of those wrong, which I am almost absolutely certain I did, I am sorry. Bernard, I know you told me how to say your last name, and I agree, it's a Germanic name, so I probably didn't have the right emphasis on it.
I'm sure you gave it your best shot, and I'm sure it was a wonderful pronunciation.
Steve, we don't need suck-ups on the show.
I mean, I appreciate it, but I mean, yeah,
no. Jared and Pat won't let you be a suck-up to me. No.
Understood.
Okay, so fair warning before we dive in, aside from our usual fair warning that Steve and I are going to, you know, spoil the whole heck out of this thing. And this, much like the previous Sandman fan film, this is intended for mature audiences. There are scenes that may be triggering for some audience, and, you know, viewers, listeners, discretion advised. No shame in passing if this might not agree with your personal tastes or, you know, your current state of mental or emotional well-being. We want everyone to feel welcome here at the LBC. Just as I said, fair warning, this is definitely like an R-rated film. There are, I mean, I don't want to just come right out and say it, but there are moments of
nudity.
Yes, there we go. Okay. Nudity and just intense, well, minor body horror too. So
yes, that's okay. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. So if this is in any way going to be an issue, no hard feelings if you turn it off and delete the podcast right here and now. I'm all good with that. Do what's best for you folks. Come back next episode and you know, we might have something a little happier.
Now, why didn't I get that warning before you sent me this video?
You volunteered.
Oh, okay. Okay. I asked for it. You're right.
Okay. So as I said earlier, the film itself runs about 14 and a half minutes. So be sure and block out a little bit of your day for it. It's not one of our, you know, quick little jaunts, but it's not the 2.5 hour Star Trek epic that we had a few episodes back.
Oh, God, I hope not. Nothing not Star Trek. I just some 2 hours. I don't know if I have 2 hours worth of stuff to say about the film.
Shag did.
Oh, well, that's Shag. I mean, you have to shoot Shag with a tranquilizer dart to get him to shut up. Sometimes two.
Okay, so again, check the show notes, watch the film. Steve and I are going to spoil the heck out of this. But besides that, it's just more fun when everybody is on the same page. There was not a trailer for this, so I might just insert some music here if I don't cobble something together. But right after this break, Steve and I will be right back to go diving right into Black Sand.
My name is Bernard Pucher, and I'm the writer and director of Black Sand. Sandman is something that I became familiar with about 5-6 years ago when my friend Stavros showed it to me. I've always wanted to make a Sandman film ever since I started reading them. It's just that it's so difficult to adapt. I mean, it's just visually and everything. It's really hard to put that down without spending a fortune and everything. So for me, it was really important that I simply make a short film that basically anybody can watch, and if they don't get all of it, they are not confused, they just want to know more. I did not want to tell a story that made the Sandman the protagonist. I felt like I would just get that wrong. I'm going to do what Neil Gaiman did in the comic books, which is I'm going to tell an anthology story where Sandman is part of somebody else's journey.
Okay, everybody back? Good. So synopsis goes something like this. A young man by the name of Richie has been having trouble sleeping lately. He lies awake in bed before finally deciding to smoke what small amount of drugs he has left. The high takes him to a park where he sees his mom and dad, but before he can go to them, he snaps back to reality. Later, Richie walks to the skate park. Along the way, a pale goth woman gives him a wink and a smile. But when he turns around to give her a second glance, she's nowhere to be seen. At the skate park, Richie and his pal Marco have a discussion about Marco's latest weird dream. It involves tentacles. We learn that Richie hasn't had a proper dream since childhood and hasn't seen his family in quite some time either. Richie says he needs to meet up with their mutual friend Sally to get some more stuff to smoke. But Marco warns against it, saying Sally has gotten into some new stuff and is, quote, properly f***ed. Of course, Richie ignores Marco's warnings and promptly jaunts over to Sally's. What he finds is straight out of a nightmare. Sally is lying naked on the bed, her body covered in various cuts and bruises. She has clearly OD'd on her new drug. Richie calls for help, but it proves to be too late. But before she passes, he finds Sally's new drug, a bag of black sand, and takes it with him. The scream Sally gives off as he runs away is beyond human. At his home, Richie wastes no time in taking a hit from the bag, finding himself back in his dream park. But he is quickly interrupted by Morpheus, the dream lord, who explains the sand is not meant for him. Richie reluctantly turns the bag over to Morpheus, but he does implore to return once more to a world where his parents want him again. Morpheus agrees, blowing a bit of sand at Richie, who returns to the dream park one final time. Death comes and asks her brother if it was the right thing to do. Morpheus replies that it was what he wanted. As the two depart, Death says that she'll be back for Richie later. And that, in a nutshell, is Black Sand. So, Steve, what do we think of this film?
I was impressed, first off, by the way that the... What was the filmmaker's name again? I'm sorry.
Bernard Pusher.
Okay. I was impressed by how he was very quickly able to capture the feel and the tone of a typical Sandman story. Like, as soon as it started, it started rolling, I said, okay, this actually feels like a story I would have read in the graphic novel. So immediately the atmosphere he has in place is he knows the world. He understands this universe that Neil Gaiman has created with these characters. And so that was quite impressive from my perspective.
Agreed. Yeah, it definitely feels like it's straight out of, well, I mean, he even says it's inspired by Preludes and Nocturnes. First volume. So, I mean, yeah, it feels like it's straight out of the stories.
Yeah, it definitely felt like I try not to, for lack of a better term, contaminate the experience with other things that surround the film. Like, I try not to watch things that the director has said or the other people in the film have said about it, because I just kind of want the experience to be my own. So I didn't read any of the notes, and I remember thinking, it's like, this, I'm wondering how he was meaning for this to fit in. Is it a retelling of Sandman getting his bag of sand back? Because is definitely a story that was told in that first story arc. Or is it another time when Sandman is supposed to have lost the sandbag, or is it something else entirely, or just supposed to be something its own separate thing? So I was questioning that. Just, I was wondering, not in a bad way. I was like, oh, I wonder what this filmmaker is trying to do here. I mean, what, did you have any thoughts about that or any ideas?
Yeah, I really didn't think too deeply into it, if it was supposed to be a retelling or if it's another oops, you know, somebody snuck off with the bag kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I just kind of took it as its own thing. So
Got it. Yeah.
You know, I guess it could technically be like it's, you know, a retelling or an alternate universe. Like, you know, I mean, this was 2017. This was way before anybody thought there would be a Netflix series.
Well, that's true. And he probably didn't want to have to deal with all the baggage that would come with using John Constantine. So, but I like the story because it's also... the best fantasy and science fiction that I, at least the ones that I love the best, they always have something else going on about them. And so a story is obviously about addiction, you know, and I read Richie's family situation as being his family. He's an addict. His family has cut him off. And because he says at one point, I want my parents to want me again, you know. So I'm thinking, well, what might have happened? So, well, probably because he's an addict, they have had to exercise some, you know, tough love with him and saying, no, we can't have you coming around here if you're going to be an addict. You know, that's the assumption that I made, because of the fact that every character, the three characters we see, the three human characters that we interact with, they are at various stages of drug addiction. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, this story is very much about that. And the choice that Richie makes at the end of, like, you know, I just want to see my parents again. And, you know, Sandman and Morpheus, you know, using the sand, I mean, he basically helps him overdose at the end. And so that is an interesting, it presents an interesting moral dilemma, you know, or provides him an interesting moral challenge to discuss. So immediately this story was, again, capturing the type of story that Gaiman would tell in the series, you know, just giving you something to, you've been served a meal, even in this short story, you've been served a meal to really chew on and think about and to contemplate over. So I was, pleasantly surprised by this from top to bottom.
Well, I didn't even think about, the characters as representing the different stages till you pointed it out. I mean, it makes perfect sense, though, because,
Well, I'm an English teacher. It's what I do. So,
Marco's the guy that's, he only smokes on the weekends. He can quit anytime. And, it's still novel to him. And and Richie's, the I have to smoke ground up moon rocks just to get back to normal.
Sure. Yeah. And of course, Sally is, where state that she's in. I always, when somebody, it wasn't something that was hitting you over the head, but it is something that when I sit down to watch a science fiction piece or a fantasy piece, I'm like, okay, you're working within a genre. What are you going to do that is going to make this have a, not necessarily be unique, but, what are you going to do that's going to make it interesting that isn't just a simple exercise within that genre? You know what I mean? And you mentioned Star Trek. The best Star Trek films have that extra something about them that gives you something to think about, gives you something to really discuss and to really bring to the the issues that we can relate to, and the same thing was happening. Same thing happened with Sandman series, and the same thing I saw happening here with this short film. I thought was a really nice for 14 minutes, and to be able to bring that into it, I thought was rather impressive.
Yeah, and I mean, I should point out this is one that of the 14 and a half minutes, I think a minute and a half is the end credits. So
yes, that's true.
Yeah, we're really talking about 12 and a half to 13 minutes of story. Yeah. So it's really a lot to put in that small frame. Mm-hmm. And there are, there are establishing shots. There are moments where there's not constantly dialogue or anything. We actually get to see like Richie going down alleys. So, I mean, it's kind of one of those, like if you compressed all, took out everything that's not dialogue or anything like that, we're probably talking a 10-minute story, and I'm not belittling it in any way. I'm trying stress that, this is a lot to put in such a small amount.
Which is, an earmark of a skillful director,
Right.
So that he just not doing any more than was absolutely necessary to get the job done, just put in what you need. One of the things that he did, obviously, with this film was make the correct assumption that the audience coming into this film is going to know who these characters are. I mean, you said at the top of this episode, at the top of the recording here, that if you don't already know these characters, I don't know why you're listening to the episode. Well, the same thing goes for this film, because, the shot of Death walking past Richie, if you don't know the Sandman series, that's not going to mean anything to you. You're just going to think there's this weird pale goth chick following this guy. What's he going to do? Like try to hook up with her or something, But for the fans of the series, we know, oh crap, that's Death, that. So we're immediately engaged in that. And a lot of information is conveyed there. Like the fact that he sees Death and she's acknowledging him, it works as a nice foreshadowing as to what he's going to be experiencing at some point. So he's playing with the prior knowledge that the fans have coming into the film. Very expertly done there. Very, very well-crafted filmmaking.
Yeah. So what did you think of the makeup for Death and for Morpheus?
It was, for being a fan film, I think they did an excellent job. I thought it was, it didn't look like a Halloween costume or anything like that. It was very well done. Along the lines of, and I mean this in the best sense of the word, they looked like really well done cosplays that you would see at a Comic-Con. And I mean like the upper end, really great ones that you will at the really big Comic Cons that you can go to and see these. And I mean that as a compliment because I've seen some really impressive cosplays that people have put on. And I also, he was with Morpheus. He was being filmed a lot in shadow, and I don't think we get any scenes of us seeing Morpheus really head on. Most of him, he's usually in the shadow, which makes sense for the character. Mm-hmm. Death is, you know, she's wearing her black tank top. She's with bare arms. And so you have to show her. And he got her right. Like, I wasn't thinking that looks completely amateurish or completely fake. Whoever did the makeup did a fine job. You know, I'm assuming they had a very limited budget. I'm assuming that they... You know, we're working under a lot of constraints for this, and to pull up what they did under whatever, I'm assuming that whatever constraints they had, it was a wonderful job. I thought it was very effective. They got the look of Death right. I mean, if you know the character, as soon as she appears on screen, you knew it was her, you know, so what more could you ask for going into a film like this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Morpheus, I think we mostly get like tight shots on his face or more like on his lips, really.
Yeah.
Because we're supposed to be more focused on what he's saying, not necessarily how he looks when he's saying it.
That's true. That's a good point. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
Which, kudos to whoever did the audio too, because Morpheus echoes like, he sounds otherworldly.
Yeah. I was like, oh, okay, someone's paying attention to the word balloons that he always has.
Yeah. Plus, you could also say, you know, he sounds kind of like what you might hear in a dream, the way it's distorted from reality.
Yeah, true.
I really like that. And speaking of things that are distorted from reality, did you jump when Sally screamed?
No.
Be honest. No.
No, I didn't jump. I was taken aback by it. Like, I was like, oh my God, this woman is really screaming, you know, but I wasn't like, it wasn't like a jump scare for me. I mean, jump scare for me is like, Alien, the chest burster, you know, coming out of Kane's chest. That's a jump scare, you know, or, you know, Reagan's head spinning around in The Exorcist. That extra scene of her coming down the stairs doing the spider walk. That's a jump scare. But no, someone's screaming. I'm like, no. I work in the public school system. I hear screams all the time. But you know, you were right. It was a blood curdling scream. I don't know if that was the actress doing that or if they did something with sound editing afterward. But it was. A shrill, bone-piercing scream, and it was it went on for the longest time too. Like, I was like, is she going to keep screaming? You know, I didn't time it for how many seconds it was. I was like, is this going to be a continual scream? What's going on? What's happening? You know. So it was very effectively done, but no, I didn't get too startled by it. Were you startled? Did you jump? Did you freak out?
And yeah, I'll admit, yes, I kind of jumped, and that's one of those things, like, it's still sending, you know, that crawling feeling down my back.
Oh, yeah.
If it was not audio tricks, then, oh my God, why is this woman not in every horror movie out there?
Exactly. It was very effective.
Like, my God, you know, if we're going to do Blair Witch remakes, put her in it and let her just be the witch out there screaming in the woods. This is from someone who grew up out in the country. If I heard that out in the woods, no, I'm running straight the other direction. I don't care.
I hear you. I grew up in deer country. So I know in the woods and everything. I know what you're talking about.
Oh, goodness. I mean, I know it's like, I don't mean to nitpick or anything, but was there anything that you might consider a low with this, or?
Well, it's not something I didn't something that I consider it to be a low, or something I would usually criticize a film for, would be anything that takes me out of the moment of the film. Like something that just completely, you know, if I'm getting invested in the world and the characters that are being presented to me, something that takes me out of that in the film is like a bad joke, or you know, like in Return of the Jedi, when Chewbacca does his Tarzan call when he's swinging in the Endor. You know what I'm talking
yes.
about?
Yes. I love that moment, but I know what you mean. Like, it really doesn't fit.
It doesn't fit, and it takes you out of the moment, and you're just like, ugh, okay. There wasn't anything like that. But in terms of, if I was going to nitpick, and again, this is a minor thing for me to come out of a fan film about, the makeup or the computer, I don't know if it was computer generated stuff, but some of the wounds on Sally didn't quite look as real. But then again, that may work for, she was, you know, snorting the magic sand. So who knows what her wounds would actually look like. You know, they could be otherworldly, and maybe that was the effect they were going for. But I remember thinking, oh, that looks kind of like early 90s CGI to me or something. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, it didn't take me out of the story or what was happening. And of course, then she screamed. So I was like, oh, well, you know, I'm not even thinking about her wounds anymore. But no, so again, I only mentioned it because you asked me. So, you know, it's your fault if I'm going to get criticized for having something negative to say about this film. But that's the only thing. And, you know, again, for being a fan-made film, there wasn't anything that I would point at and say, you know, this is, you know, this needs to be done differently. I expected more. You know, that would be very, very arrogant of me to say something like, or certainly overly critical. Now, if it was a, you know, a big budget Hollywood film and this is what I was being presented with, I would be like, okay, you know, come on.
CGI flash.
Yes. But, I go back to what I said earlier. I really respect the craft of filmmaking and anyone who's going to take the time and not only to try to get their vision out there, but also to collaborate with a bunch of other people, because there are a lot of moving parts when you're putting a film together. And, you know, it's so difficult to do. It's so difficult to do an effective 12 to 13 minutes of film, let alone like a 2-hour feature. But if you pull off something and it is engaging and it is captivating and it pulls me into the world and you tell a fully realized story, my hat is off to you. Good job. Fantastic. You have created something that is worthwhile. That's how I feel about it.
I couldn't have said it better myself, because, I mean, I don't have any real nitpicks, lows, or anything with this. Mm-hmm. This is...
Oh, you yeah. ask me about the nitpicks and the lows, and you get me to say something, and now you get to be the good guy. Like, oh, I didn't see anything. Thanks, Clinton. Jeez.
Hey, you know, highs, lows, what this all around. No, this is a practically perfect fan film to me. And trust me, I have seen highs, lows, and what this.
Good. And well, that's another thing. I'll add this as another caveat. I am not familiar with fan films, so maybe I would feel my one little criticism would go away if I did see more fan films and see like, ooh, like you were saying, there's some real lows and some real highs here.
See, there we go. Mm-hmm. You need to watch more fan films, Steve.
Yeah, I'll do it in all my spare time I have as a high school teacher. Yeah, that's a
yeah, you know, that 5 minutes you have somewhere between Christmas and New Year's.
Yes, I'll watch a fan film instead of going to the bathroom.
you technically can do both, Steve. They are available on YouTube, and you do have a phone.
No, I don't have that kind of coordination. You know, there's people who can walk and chew gum at the same time. I'm not one of those people.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, and apparently this is an award-winning fan film, but I am not sure what award it, it actually won. Bernard, I don't believe, actually told me when he emailed me. He just said it is an award-winning film, and it whatever it won, it very much deserved it.
Okay, well, good for him. You know, I mean, that's interesting because what do they have, like, fan film festivals or like?
Yes, like there are such things.
Okay, so they might have won an award there. Okay, that's very interesting. Well, good for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like, there are fan film festivals. Some conventions have in the past anyway had fan film festivals and awards. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's communities out there for it. There are actual people who still listen to this show. So, I mean, there are people out there who enjoy fan films.
Very cool.
Not everybody's cool. A snob like you, Steve.
Well, I think I've been won over. You know, it's I say my lack of experience is from ignorance, not snobbery. I'll put it to you that way. If you don't know what's out there, then you don't know to experience. Now I know. So here we go.
All righty. Well, just to let everybody know, when you go and check out the fan film, if you haven't already, do look at the other videos on that channel. There are interviews with the director, the producer, and a cinematographer, and a couple of the actors. So, you know, that altogether, that's another 15-ish minutes worth of footage and information. So should be kind of interesting for everyone. Steve, I think I have said my piece about Black Sand. Do you have anything else to add?
No, that's it. Other than to say thank you for having me on and inviting me to do this. This was a really cool experience. I really enjoyed the film. And again, thank you for having me on.
Oh, an absolute pleasure. Thank you for joining me down here. Before you go, do let people know where else they can find you online and in the podcastosphere.
Well, I'm on social media, Facebook. I'm on, I still call it Twitter. What's it called? X or whatever now.
It's called Twitter. I don't know what that letter thing is.
Right. It's a Givens blog. I also have a blog that I haven't updated in a couple of years, but I've been meaning to get back to it at some point. It's a Givens blog at Blogspot. I am a frequent guest on the Fire and Water Network podcast. I have been on a couple of their different shows, and I've become good friends with a lot of the guys there. So it's always a good time to go in and you know, pontificate about things I am have some knowledge on, and even talk about the stuff I don't know anything about. So always a neat learning experience.
Okay. And folks, do follow Steve. Go check out some of the other shows he's been on. I don't know that he's ever had a bad appearance. So we're going to go teach some rats how to do Hamlet.
Oh, man.
On unicycle, because that's the only way to do it now. That's true. It came absolutely in my head while we were doing this. We're going to do Hamlet on unicycles with rats. You can ride a unicycle, can't you, Steve?
I actually have been on a unicycle. Not for very long. I think I fell off quite quickly. But I think for the safety of your rodent friends, let them do the unicycle, and I will remain still, because I don't want them to inadvertently turn them into like the basement roadkill. That would not be pretty.
But it does make good eating.
Oh, you really are from the country, aren't you?
No, I've just been down in this basement for the last almost 40 episodes. All right, folks. So we'll take a quick promo break, and I'll be back with some listener feedback.
Dinosaurs, purple skies, motorcycles, the hero who cries. All on covers of comic books that sell the best. But what sells more than the rest? Monkeys, covers with monkeys. Yes, you know you got to stock the monkeys. Hey, hey, stock the monkeys. Hey, hey. Celebrating the tradition of apes in comics. For 2024, Gorilla Grodd has transformed JL May into JL April. Honestly, he does that a lot. Exploring a phylum of amazing apes, such as
Batman Annual number 23,
Wonder Woman number 170,
Kong on the Planet of the Apes, issue 1,
Angel and the Ape,
The Helmet of Fate, Detective Chimp,
Showcase number 77,
JLA versus Godzilla versus Kong,
Swamp Thing volume 2, annual 3,
Kong Gorilla, issues 1 through 4,
with a host of podcast all-stars like
The Bat Pod,
Resurrections, an Adam Warlock and Thanos podcast,
Outcasters, a Batman and the Outsiders Podcast,
Dalif of Flanga,
The Quarterbin Podcast,
Coffee and Comic,
Once Upon a Geek,
Fanholes Podcast,
Married with Content with John and Maggie,
Campus Comics Cast,
and many more. Look for the hashtag JLApril2024 on social media, the podcast crossover event that doesn't monkey around.
JLApril.
Damn dirty ape.
Really? Monkey around? This is what you're giving me? I don't know why I agreed to this.
Stick to the script, monkey boy!
Hey, everybody. Thanks for sticking with me. This is, of course, the feedback portion of the episode. Once again, I'd like to thank Steve Givens for joining me down here. And I want to give a quick shout-out to all the Crusader Club members who helped make this show and this network possible. Once again, I don't have a list because I'm pretty sure Jared is blocking my access to all of those. Maybe he thinks I would pass along some sort of access to Jason, so that's understandable, I guess. So, last episode, which was James Bond in the Blink of an Eye, got likes, shares, and all the social media love from Pat Sampson, The Hammer Strikes, Gene Hendricks, Angelica Fetty Wolf, Kathy Bright, Weasel Skull, James Meal, Chris at BTO and Batbooks, and Superman Radio Revisited. If I missed anybody, do please let me know, because I have not been getting quite all the updates on the social medias for everything like I should. So there's a good chance I probably missed at least one or two of them. All right, over on the Twitters, we got a little bit of feedback. Jared Albrecht says, "Never say never again, slander? This is unacceptable!" Yeah, well, deal with it, Jared. The Hammer Strike says, "That was just fun, especially the line after the special guest star showed up." Yeah, I'll agree with that, Gene. That was actually a really... We got... some applause from Chris over at BTO and Bat Books. He says, "Well done, everyone." Well, thank you, Chris. Much appreciated. Right, that looks like that is it for our feedback this episode. Not a lot, but, you know, that's fine. I'm glad everybody wrote in who did. And I'm glad for everybody who does listen, like, share, all the fun stuff. You know, you don't have to put out all the social media efforts. Just the listening. All right, so I'm going to cut it kind of short here. I know we ran a little long this time, so that's fine. And I do hope everybody checks out all the other shows on the network. Yes, all the other shows. It's mandatory now. No, I just hope everybody enjoys what they can. And I hope that you will definitely join me back down here again for another Fan Film Friday.
Today you can take your telephone, your cell phone. You can make a movie on that. If it's a really cool movie and it's funny and it's dramatic or whatever, you can post it on YouTube.
If you want to make films and you want to tell stories, you can do it.
After all art is experience.
But if you have a
obsessed with film and you love to tell stories and you love working in that medium, then that'll give you the strength to be persistent.